It's time for Driving Me Crazy, coming to you live from Beechtree Studios near beautiful Pinehurst, North Carolina. This is the only show where a husband and wife drive, talk cars and life, and still love one another each day. Here's John and Laurie. Or is it Laurie and John? Oh, take it away, you crazy kids.
Well, today,
it's Laurie
Kelly,
today.
It's just, that's exactly so. Today it's Hezzy and Laurie. Johnny, unfortunately, cannot join us today. He has another commitment, and he sends his regrets, but hear from him next week. And so it's just you and me, babe, talking about the Mazda 3 2.5 turbo, all-wheel drive, premium plus SDN in machine gray metallic. Could it be any longer of a name? But first,
well,
a funny story.
I hope it lives up to its name. You think it lives up to its name?
Well, here's the thing. Last week, this is such a funny story. We had the car rotation last Wednesday, and we had the Lexus, which we had reviewed and loved, thought it was just, you know, walked on water kind of thing. It was a great car. But we had gotten an email from Jennifer Harper, who, you know, is our angel that rotates cars out for us. And she
right.
said that her person would be running late, and that it would be, instead of in the later part of the morning, it would be in the latter part of the afternoon. Well, the weather lately here has been very predictable but very strange, in that it's been quite hot, and then around 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, literally you could click your fingers, Hezzy, and the heavens open up, and torrential rain and driving wind and thunder and lightning, you know, go tearing through the, you know, the world. It's like the second coming. So we were concerned because we didn't know if this guy would make it to rotate the cars out. And Johnny kept looking at the door, and he would say, no, he hasn't come yet, he hasn't come yet. And so finally he says to me, and this is like getting on 7 o'clock, and he says to me, did you drive the car? Did you drive the Lexus? And I said, no. I said, it's where you parked it when we, you know, last came in. And he said, well, somebody moved
it. It sounds like it was last week because you went through that, and it was actually the Mazda.
And it was the Mazda. Well, here's the thing.
Right.
You couldn't find two more different cars, now that we've driven the Mazda, than the Lexus and this Mazda. This is it looked identical. It was like even the same color gray. So when we realized that, you know, that it had been rotated out, it was such it was such a surprise. But this Mazda, you know, again, these are the Far East makes. Again, I will always say, in my book, it's Hyundai that gives you the most bang for your buck. But my goodness, this is yet another one that delivers. It's a very different car. It is a premium car in the Mazda lineup. But the starting price is $20,000. I mean, that's incredible. Now we were amazed at the starting price of the Lexus last week, which was around $40,000, because, I mean, in anybody else's book, that would have been a $65,000 starting price for what you got. I mean, you got everything and then some. But here you have this car that we mistook for a real serious luxury sedan, and it's got a starting price of $20,000. It was incredible. And, you know, it is different, but it's got all the bells and whistles that you need, especially for safety, and it's got very good mileage. It gets a 31 highway. It gets 36 highway, 28 city, for an average of 31 miles a gallon. But you can't complain about that. You really can't. So the car is elegant. It's an elegant four-door sedan. It's beautiful. It's got a beautiful grille and beautiful lights. And if you look at cars these days, so many of them, from the outline of them, look like so many others. But where you need to look now is the design of the, as you look at a car head on, the design of the grill,
the
design
the grill
of the headlights.
Yeah, the grill is very, very beautiful. Yeah,
it's
it got
very
a beautiful grill, always did.
And very distinguishing. It distinguishes
timeless,
it as a Mazda. It's classic.
Because it hasn't changed. I don't know how they did that, but it has never changed and never seems to need to.
Now, one thing I've noticed, and I bet you have too, Hezzy, is it wasn't that long ago when it seemed like the car manufacturers were big on chrome trim. Everything was chrome trim.
Yeah.
Chrome trim everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it became to a point where it was almost overkill. Now we're seeing much less chrome and much finer line and design. It's you're right. It's elegant. It's modern. It's classic. But I guarantee you, if you drove this car 10 years from now and it had never been driven a mile, it had been kept in limbo in a garage somewhere, I bet you wouldn't see much change in the design. It's beautiful. So
yes.
When we were surprised that it was not the Lexus, but rather the Mazda that was in our driveway, this really does speak volumes because Lexus is known for their, you know, really beautiful design, and so is this Mazda 3. So let's talk about safety, because if Johnny was here, he's all about
mm-hmm.
that, and so am I. It's got it all. First of all, well, let me back up a bit. It's a four-cylinder double cam overload overhead engine, a double cam overhead engine, and that's a unique design to Mazda. It's also four-cylinder, but powerful four-cylinder, and it's all-wheel drive. Now, that's an option that you can. It's not standard. It's an option that you can, have when you go into, you know, the higher models, and
price
especially
point.
In and especially with this Premium Plus SDN model. So you can opt for all-wheel drive, and then of course we'll talk about this a little later. It's going to beg the question: who would want all-wheel drive? And we'll talk about that in a bit. But it's loaded with safety features. It's got all the backup, all the camera. It's got a very good display, a very nice display, one that's easy to see. It's easy to control. You don't have to go to college to figure out how to drive this car. Everything's where it belongs. Now, I want to also say this. Here we had the Premium Plus Turbo, and that came in at $32,000 and change. Okay, so now we're looking at $12,000 more than the base price for the, you know, base model.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is it worth it? And that's always the question. Is that model worth the $32,000? Well, yeah, because again, it's got it all. It's got too many features actually for me to go into. Johnny, I wish he was here because he was crazy about this. But it's SkyActiv technology. It's got the 360-degree view monitor, traffic jam assist, dimming exterior mirror, on and on and on. Smart city brake support, blah, 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 blah. It's powerful for four-cylinder, very. But here's the thing that struck me about this car. Sometimes when you get a car, especially a sedan, the interior allocation of space can be compromised. Oftentimes you'll find that the second passenger row has very limited leg room, that your knees are up around your chin. And that is done generally to provide larger trunk space. But somehow, because of the sleek design of the chassis of this vehicle, it's got tremendous leg room in the second row, and it's got enormous trunk space. It's quite the car. And so, you know, did I love it? I loved it for what it was. Is it my favorite car? For this price point, yeah, probably is my favorite car for this price point. I don't know where you could get something that's so loaded and so comfortable with all these safety features. I mean, radar cruise control and stop and go, smart brake support and traction control systems, on and on. I could go on forever. But the little things, that we love, like rain sensing windshield wipers. I know that sounds silly, but when you're driving on a highway, thank you for saying so, because when you're driving on a highway and all of a sudden it's raining and then it's lightening up and it's raining, you want to spend your time checking out who's in front of you and who's coming up alongside of you and not wondering about, you know, manually adjusting your windshield wipers. This rain sensing windshield wiper, I hope it becomes one of the new standards on all cars. It's so important. The dual zone climate control, especially for a couple like Johnny and me, you know, he says tomato and I say tomato. He says potato and I say potato. You know, he wants it one way and I want it another way. So the dual zone climate control is great. One thing it didn't have, it had heated seats but not air-conditioned seats. And as we spoke about in the Lexus, that was the best air-conditioned seat system we've ever experienced in any car. It was like, as it was like there was a little mini air-conditioning unit in the seats.
That's nice.
It was great. Now, forgive me because I cannot remember the name of the new company to me, but the sound system, I don't have it in front of me, of the Lexus last week. But this vehicle has a Bose sound system. And you may recall, Hezzy, some time ago, years ago now, I had the pleasure of meeting Dr. Bose. And yes, there is a doctor.
Right.
There was, And there are very few people that I've met, at least, who, when you walk into their presence, you know that you're surrounded, you're in the presence of greatness. And I'm not talking about a religious or spiritual moment, no, not of course. But I am talking about when you're with somebody who lives, breathes, and was born to do what he does or she does, you can sense that. And Dr. Bose was such a person. One thing, to digress a little bit, is why I met him. It wasn't because of his sound systems, for which he was, you know, the inventor most famous for. But he had actually developed a system for, we always used to call it Detroit, meaning car manufacturers, but he had created a balance system that enabled a car to go at top speed and abruptly turn a corner 90 degrees and maintain its parallel balance to the ground. What they showed was I wish you could have seen this thing. It was incredible. It was videotaped. They videotaped a Mercedes that had a champagne glass strapped to the top. And it was full, topped with champagne. So this, you know, driver gets in, he revs up, and he takes it along a course. And, you know, it's going on and on. Not one drop is spilled. And then he turns this corner abruptly, and then again and again, not one drop is spilled. Because the technology that Dr. Bose had invented created a way in which the chassis would stay, as I said, level to the ground. And it was phenomenal. And it was never bought by car manufacturers. The system
It's a very, very interesting concept, because it doesn't make sense from a weight standpoint, does it? Because when you're making a 90-degree turn, you got part of the car going one way and the other part of the weight going another way, and you would think that there would be a change in the equilibrium, but evidently he's able to keep the chassis from moving and the rest of the thing can somehow manage? That's amazing.
You know, it was amazing, Hezzy. And as you know, especially you know where you when you were going through some of your hospitalizations, when you're in a car, you're moving. The car's moving, you're moving. When it turns, you're turning. You're going with the car side by side. You know, they say that if you're I mean, you felt it, didn't you, when you were?
Yeah, sure. In any car, in any bus, anything in a truck. Yeah. So
Dr. Bose's system, if you had been in that vehicle, you wouldn't have felt a thing. You wouldn't have lunged from side by side. You wouldn't have gone up and down. You would have been steady. The car was adjusting. You didn't have to adjust. But the reason why...
I
got to
ask you a question. I mean, it sounds really weird, but did the automobile manufacturers not buy because it caused the driver not to be aware of what was really happening or what was going on, that they would be too far removed from the car and the inertia of it all? It sounds like it would be the most subtle thing in the world. I'd want that in a Rolls Royce if I could afford it. But a Mazda would be great for that too.
Well, if we had 6 hours on this radio show and you kept guessing, Hezzy,
you would never
guess why. The reason was unbelievable. So I'm going to save you stressing your brain. It was because it was such perfect technology that it did not have built-in obsolescence. Once you bought a car with that implementation, it would never break. It was perpetual. It was forever. It was perfect as mechanically possible.
What do you mean the car would be? I don't get it. The car would be perfect forever and ever?
The Bose system was perfect. It would not age with the built-in obsolescence that many cars have. And therefore, Detroit didn't want it because it wouldn't age the way they have built-in obsolescence with so many vehicles. This 100,000-mile warranty and all this stuff. Cars aren't meant to go a million miles. I belonged to a consulting group for Volvo years ago, as you know, and we had the Million Mile Club. And those were diehard Volvo owners who kept their cars going for a million miles and then some. And these were cars that were built in the 1960s, before, you know, built-in obsolescence was a factor. Car manufacturers can't afford to build a car that's going to last the long haul. They have to sell cars. Right. So if a car lasts 10 or 20 years,
that's one enough.
Thing. But if a car lasts 5 or 6 or 8 years or 150,000 miles, what's it time for, Hezzy? It's time for a new car.
A new car.
So Dr. Bose's system didn't abide. Dr. Bose's tremendous system was.
But that is a reality.
So well built.
Because that's the way the world works.
It's a reality.
So everything falls apart over time. Even us people, we fall apart over time. So the good Lord figured out that we have a timeline as well. Maybe cars have to do the same thing.
Well, it's true that we each have an expiration date of which none of us know what that is.
Correct.
And, you know, if you want to blame somebody, and you know, it's Adam and Eve, they really screwed up in the garden. otherwise, we would be, you know, perfect forever and ever, but hey, what the heck? Can't undo some of the things that happened in the distant past. But the fact is, we are in a world of built-in obsolescence because that's how it's necessary for the financial well-being of companies. Can you name me one refrigerator that you know in your life that's been working for, you know, half a century? Now, I can tell you something. This is really cool.
Okay.
I have my mother's KitchenAid Mixmaster that she was given as an engagement present in 1950. I use it daily. It has never failed her. It's never failed me. It works. It's never been in the repair shop. It's never had to be oiled. It works 72 years later as well today as it did back then. Somewhere KitchenAid, you know, blew it, and they decided that they would, you know, probably make more faulty equipment later on. But this is an example of something that's built to last. Who was it, Hezzy, that would say, was it Ford trucks built to last? Was that
I think so.
And then they do. I mean, interestingly enough, trucks do, even though but then how can you tell? Because usually trucks are really put through their paces. And, hard terrain and hard use. But, no, so this is what happened with Dr. Bose. Now, you know, you look at a Jaguar, and if Johnny was here, he would tell you what he always says about Jaguar. Most Jaguars are still – I forgot how it goes. What does he say, Hezzy? Most Jaguars are still on the road. They haven't made it home yet or something like that.
Yes, something like that. They could conceivably still be in the garage.
Yeah, exactly. But then you do have vehicles like the Toyota Land Cruiser, the Toyota Land Cruiser, not the Toyota
right.
Land Cruiser.
The one that you had.
Exactly, from the 1970s. That thing was built like a tank. It was a tank. And the one car I regret, and we've talked about this, has he? The one car that I regret not having to this day is my old Toyota Land Cruiser. It had no suspension. You had to get out and manually turn the hubs in the snow. It was a real wreck of a car to drive, but it never broke down.
You loved it.
Repairs, I loved it. And Hezzy, I took that thing, thank God it's now 4 decades later, I used to let that thing rip going past the New York Public Library.
That's amazing.
From 7th Avenue toward Madison Avenue. And people, you know, jaywalkers, they would flee. They would flee like birds. because it was a stick shift, you could really rev. I was terrible. You could really rev the motor and it vroomed and everything like that. People would just, they would flee. Would I drive that car today? You betcha. Do I wish I had it today? You betcha. And why? I don't know. Is this like wanting to go back and to the good old days? I don't know. But
yeah.
it was so dependable. And that's not to say, again, what does Bugsy Lawler, our dear friend Bugsy Lawler, always say? They don't make a bad car anymore today.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true, they don't. But they do still make cars to have a certain lifetime, to have a certain expiration date. And that's just a fact of the economy. That's a fact of life.
Yeah.
So let's get back to this car, and I'll tell you who's going to buy it. This is not a car that a 20-something person would choose, probably not even a 30-something person unless it was a commuter, but, you know, commuting to work is still kind of a up-in-the-air
mm-hmm.
thing
among,
you know, many, many workers. This is a car for a couple who needs a second car. Their kids are out of the house. They're empty nesters. They're heading toward retirement. They want a car that's going to be comfortable to drive in long haul locally, a car that's going to just, you know, do everything they want. So the question is, why all-wheel drive? Well, all-wheel drive is not only important in snowy conditions, it's important in
rain, wet
conditions, because it can be very slippery. And again, to digress, let me make sure that everybody knows that when you put your car in cruise control and it's really raining hard, you're going to hydroplane and you're going to increase your risk of crashing, of literally going off the road and having an accident. So do not ever put cruise control on during a rain, a heavy rain, or even a light rain. Just don't. So all-wheel drive is important for that. So it doesn't become a question of road condition. It becomes a question of where you're driving. Is it local? Then you don't need all-wheel drive, unless you live in a mountainous area, perhaps. Is it... if you're going long distances, it is. It's going to eat up a little bit more gas, perhaps, but that's okay because you don't know what's going to be ahead of you in a mile or 10 miles, 100 miles, 1,500 miles if you're going across country, whatever. So, the all-wheel drive, and it is a little more expensive, but it does buy you security. You've got all four wheels working in your favor. So, that's, you know, and again, here's a car that's so loaded and so wonderful and with the top price in the low 30s, unbelievable, elegant, comfortable, 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 quiet, easy to control, easy to manage. So, yes, this is a perfect car for somebody who needs a great second car or a couple who's retiring, approaching retirement, in retirement, and needs a great car that's not too expensive but suits them at that stage of their life and really, to an extent, says, I've arrived. We used to always think that was only the case, you know. When I say that, Hezzy, what do you think of? You think of the Rolls Royce that you wish you had, right? if you were driving
well,
worldwide?
Well, yeah, I would, but the point is, I don't feel there's a deficiency in claiming that, hey, I've arrived in a Mazda. You know,
no.
I think there's always a need. There's no you know, maybe you could afford a Rolls Royce, and that will be good for the rest of your life because you have that sort of means. But most of us don't. And
Now, Hezzy.
I would be proud to drive something like that.
But you see, it's not that long ago that it was a stigma. Think about it.
Yes, it was.
Oh, you're driving
a
Toyota,
right.
Or you're driving a Honda. Oh, you're driving a Hyundai, or, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
It was you're driving a Far Eastern car. It's got to be, you know, cheaper. Well, it was. It was not that long ago. And it was cheaper, and it seemed cheaper. And then bango, all of them, everyone, Kia, everybody. They just started, you know, incorporating so many of the features that make a car supremely excellent, coupled with the fine design, coupled with visionary design. You know, we were talking about the visionary design just last week with Lexus, and you know, so now that stigma is utterly lifted. You can no longer say that about any car in the world. And that's because, you know, they've really seized the moment, and they've produced, and they're producing these vehicles for a lot less money than their counterparts, you know, especially their European counterparts. But anyway, who knows how things are going to go? I look at this whole electric car thing, how government's now impacting the progress of that and of the prediction of that in the future. We are still dealing with this microchip problem, so much so that we are now seeing great difficulty even getting press cars. This microchip problem, which we discussed, I guess, last week, is a major crisis in the automotive industry. So I don't know where things are going. For the first time, Hezzy, I think I can tell you that I feel unsettled about the car industry. Mm. I feel very unsettled. You know, here we are in August, and we haven't seen a single 2022 model yet. And by now we should have been 3 months into it.
Oh, you think so already? I didn't realize it because I was thinking about the same thing. I was expecting 2022, but that hasn't come out yet.
Nope.
Is it because of COVID? Because of this. Yeah.
The shutdown because of COVID?
Absolutely, COVID and the lack of chips. And that's a worldwide problem.
The uncertainty of labor, the uncertainty of costs. This is a very uncertain world right now. And let me ask you this question, because I'm sure you've been talking about it nonstop. What's the promise of the new government coming into New York City now that, you know, Cuomo's going to be gone?
We have no idea. Nobody really knows, because a lot of it is just, we have no idea who we elect into office. So we learn about it after they get in.
It's
just promises.
Are you surprised that this turned out so quickly, that this went down so quickly for Cuomo?
I was very surprised because he's not the sort of guy that would resign so quickly. I don't think that was a word that he would have used ever. But it was prudent for him to step down because there was no way he could escape it. There's even a call now, even though he doesn't need to be impeached, but there is a call for him to be impeached just to show him that we don't need to wait till the 24th of August, that we'll impeach him now and he can step down now. We don't need to wait any further. But the thing that bothers me the most is that society, and I guess that's predominantly male, but there are too many women enablers as well, who don't believe women. And I don't understand where that comes from. I always believed my mother. I didn't have a sister, so I didn't have anyone, you know, a sister to believe in. But all the women I know were terrific, including you. I mean, it's just amazing that one could, consider that women are less than. Less than what? I have no idea.
There's a wonderful line in Gilbert and Sullivan's Pirates of Penzance when one of the pirates, Dick Deadeye, says, "It's human nature I'm resigned. And doesn't that say it all? And on that note, Hezzy,
you're resigned.
It's human nature. I'm resigned. So on that note, from Gilbert and Sullivan, I bid you a good week. And
all
Johnny and I will talk to you next week. Have a wonderful
Thanks
week. Stay
so
cool.
Much.
It's going to be hot, so stay
you
cool.
You too. Do the same.
All right.
All the best.
Take care, everybody.
Thanks
yes.
again,
bye-bye
Lori.
Now.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Let's move on to our next guest, the one and only Brian Harrod, who is the publisher and the editor of the Yonkers Newswire. How are you, Brian? Thanks for hanging in there. Appreciate it.
No, I enjoy the guests that come on before me each Thursday. They're very interesting, and I'm just wondering when you get your Rolls Royce, who's going to be the chauffeur? Huh?
I have no idea. Well, you know, the truth be told, might as well leak this out now before it goes crazy. I can't afford a Rolls Royce. Can't afford a Bentley.
Welcome to the club. You may know him.
His name is Michael Edelman. Big political connections here in Westchester County and the state, even on the national stage. And at one time he wrote he had a Bentley. And one day I drove in it and I was really surprised. The look is stunning, and it was a beautiful ride, and then he got rid of it, and I said, why would you get rid of it? It was just like breathtaking. He said because, you know, he evidently went over some pothole or something like that, and it caused, I think it was like $9,000 to fix the front end. He said there was no need for that anymore. And that was the last time he had a Bentley. But he could afford whatever he wanted. But he said no reason to go there. I don't know what he drives now. Oh, yeah, I think he drives a Mercedes, which is a lot less than the Bentley. But he's a guy that's accomplished in so many different ways, including the cars he drives. So, and I used to drive a car. Now I don't drive a car. I'm not allowed to drive a car, so I have that excuse. So so that means I haven't arrived or I have arrived. I'm not quite sure.
Well, even today, nowadays, it's an all-electric future, it looks like. Everybody's jumping on the electric bandwagon with the upcoming automobiles.
You know what I don't understand, though? You know, when people live in the metropolitan area as we do, you live in a city, where are we going to plug our cars in to charge them up overnight? Because there isn't, I mean, the amount of money to build an infrastructure around electric has got to be huge. I can't even imagine what it would cost.
On Vineyard Avenue in Yonkers, I saw a guy, he parks on the street. I don't know how he gets this in front of his house, but he parks on the street, and there's an outlet box on the, I guess where it would be normally in somebody's garage, is on the outside of the apartment building. Maybe it's the owner of the building, maybe he rents the other apartments, I don't know who the person is, but he runs a cable from his house to on-street parking and charges his car. He puts like a little rubber thing on the sidewalk that people kind of step over to charge it. But you're right. It's once you get an electric car, where the hell are you going to, if you're in Yonkers, where the hell are you going to charge up, you know, if you're in a congested area?
That's one thing. Like when you look at a place like Yonkers and you look at private houses, that's doable, conceivably, as long as, you know, you could park in front of the house or somewhere where you're not going to be using somebody else's, you know, electricity. But what do you do if you're in a tall tower on the waterfront? Mm-hmm. Where do you go there? are they going to include a charge point in the garages? Which so far they haven't done. And then we still haven't figured out how to really build an infrastructure across our highways. And you know, it's one thing to go in and have a bite or a cup of coffee, but now you're going to have to sit and how long are you going to wait at the restaurant while you're charging your car as you're driving across the country? I don't know how they'll do that. So I don't know how it's done.
Well, it's coming fast. It's how can you say this? It's, you know, there's been so much Elon Musk. He's you know, he's doing great things that with the batteries and with sending rockets up, and he's pushed this electric vehicle technology pretty far, to where even mainstream model makers are doing it. But the man has just lied, deceived, missed estimates. And just done anything by hook or crook to get there. You know, I guess on one side it's good that he's pushing us towards a carbon neutral.
He's focused
in the future, but the other side of it is the way he's doing it. It's like an ends justifies the means kind of thing. If he was in any other industry, I don't know if he would. He'd probably be under SEC investigation and maybe in jail.
Interesting point. But he's like an anomaly. He's an outlier. He's a he's a sort of guy. You know, I just when I saw the like a couple of clips here and there about him or this side or the other. Never impressed me one way or the other, but I actually heard I sat down and listened to an hour, a YouTube interview. I'm telling you, Brian, this guy is brilliant.
No, he's very sharp. It's just
God, I don't know where
trains that are going to run from the U.S. to China or from, New York to Los Angeles or all these other little things. I guess it's good for the hype, but in my opinion, he's lucky that he sends up satellites for the NSA on that and with his space company because he's too valuable a national the security component of our country, so I guess he's not going to be punished. But you just could not be a cell phone provider, another technology company, or even another company just to mislead people over and over and over and over again. But it is what it is, and he's fortunate too then that this has been a low interest environment, so there's been a lot of people willing to put money in on risky stocks. You know what I'm saying?
There was a lot of that going on.
Yes.
I don't even know how he even has the intestinal fortitude, for lack of other terms, to invest in Bitcoin, because we saw them fluctuate practically overnight to a loss of I don't know how much percentage points, and some people went bust literally overnight. And
yes.
And yet, I think the last time he made close to $50 billion practically overnight. So
he's like the modern version of
people have so much money, they don't care. $50 billion doesn't mean anything.
He's kind of like the modern version of P.T. Barnum, but he does deliver rockets and he does deliver some cars that do perform. Yeah. It's one thing to build a prototype. It's another thing to mass produce these prototypes. You know what I'm saying? So. We'll see what happens, and
My money's on him.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
My money's on him. I think he's going to do it.
Someone will do it, it'll be him.
I think so.
Yes.
So we'll see. So what's going on in your world, in Yonkers, in the city of Yonkers? Anything particular that piqued your interest?
You know, the last subject your previous guest has just been the buzz around Yonkers with the new governor. You know, all politics is local, so people are I guess Andrea Stewart-Cousins will be the acting lieutenant governor for a short while, as long as there's no
very short while
challenges like there was a lifetime. Yeah.
Well, she's not interested because, first of all, the lieutenant governor doesn't have the clout and power and the capacity of the leader of the Senate. So she is the leader of the Senate. She's in the majority, so she's a majority leader. And and the bottom line is that's a tremendous amount of clout. She won't give that up. So,
yeah.
And then there is talk now of impeaching Cuomo so we can get rid of him right now rather than wait for the transition period. And then who's going to become the lieutenant governor at that point? And I don't know.
Well, she does.
Can the governor?
She's the acting one. And if there's no challenges and Ms. Hochul chooses someone very rapidly, then she would just do it for a short time. But I know the last time when it was with, I believe it was with Governor Patterson and Elliot Spitzer, it went on for like 8 months or so. So, but then it was, it was very, the Senate was neck and neck, but right now with the Democratic majority, I have a feeling it's going to all fall into place very quickly.
Yeah, well, I think it would as well. The thing is, though, Andrea Stewart-Cousins doesn't want to hold on to that seat because it's of no value
to her. She would have both functions. She would.
She would have both.
She would still be the majority leader, and then she would be the acting lieutenant governor, which is kind of a ceremonial position. The only thing is, if there's a tie in the Senate, the lieutenant governor comes to vote, and that's why it was so much trouble last time, because there were ties in the Senate. You know what I'm saying? And who was going to be this lieutenant governor? So there was court challenges and other that.
Okay.
Yeah, but this time there's a Democratic majority. And I assume that since Ms. Hochul is from Western New York, around Buffalo, that she'll seek somebody from downstate, and maybe maybe even a little more diverse. New York's getting more and more diverse. Right now, as it stands, where it used to be three men in a room, now it's two ladies in the room and two African-Americans in the room. So it's a... when they go to do the budget next year, it's got a different flavor than it had, maybe 4 years ago or 8 years ago type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's a reality, and that's for sure. So it'll be very interesting to see where all this goes. Do you think that in order to teach Cuomo a lesson, they're going to still impeach him just to get rid of him now rather than wait till the 24th of August?
Well, it's a little bit of every other politician saying he did the right.
Well, you cut out for some reason. Oh yeah, we lost him for a moment. Let's see if we can get him back. Bear with me a moment. I'll see if I can call him back. One moment here. All right, let's see if I can get him because I've got his number. Oh, no, he's calling us.
Hello?
One second. Yeah, thanks for calling back. I didn't realize we had just lost you. How are you?
Can you hear
me
or no?
Thanks for calling back.
Okay.
I can hear you. I'm
fine. No problem. What I was trying to say before is you had every politician in our area and all across the state saying, it's good he resigned. It was good for the state. We have a COVID crisis to worry about, and this Delta variant, and several, getting our economy, back on its feet. But then there's some people who want to push it further because if he is impeached, he can't run for that office again. But personally, I believe resignation would be enough. And if there are some criminal charges, he'll have to deal with those up in Albany or here in Westchester. But I think it would be a waste of time, personally. If the guy's resigning, what's the goal? It just make political points, I guess, in a hearing.
Vindictiveness.
That'll just take up time.
It's vindictiveness.
Yeah.
It's just to get back at him. That's all it is. What I find really compelling about this whole issue, and it's a question of how is it that there is no mechanism within government to relieve ourselves of these sort of behavior patterns that have to be known. there's just no way you can keep this quiet for all these years without anyone not knowing what's going on. Look at the, excuse the term, look at the crap that happened here in Yonkers, where they had a woman who worked in the teaching. She was part of the Board of Education, and for some reason or another, they had her photograph herself, you know, practically in some sort of underwear type gear, and it ended up being published. And yet, no allegation, no accusation of anybody that put her up to it. So she never said a goddamn word. How do we allow all this stuff to happen? This is what I don't get. Where is the support system for people who are being bullied, literally bullied into doing things they would never in their right mind do, all just to keep the jobs? What's going on?
Well, that's one, that's is an age-old problem. You know, whether males or females, people do get bullied into all kinds of things in situations where it depends on their putting food on the table. Even when Tish James said she was investigating Governor Cuomo, you know, last year when this first started coming out, you know, my first remark was, you know, she's doing the right thing, but she'll probably pay for this later. Andrew Cuomo had a reputation of being a bully, being a little vindictive, of getting even, you know what I'm saying, of punishing people who came after him. So more than a few people probably thought, you know, this was it's not a good idea to cross him, you know, especially if I want to be in this type of work in New York, you know what I'm saying? But the and so there were a lot of enablers. A lot of people just didn't want to get involved. A lot of people, you know, sometimes I take up issues in Yonkers, and people tell me that, you know, this is not your fight. Why are you getting involved in this? But one, it's that's my what I do for a living. I report on things. I'm a journalist,
right?
And I believe that journalism should hold people accountable. It's not that I'm this side or that side. It's just that I believe the story should be out there. But you know, if you're in the governor's office, you're making six figures, and there's a lot of competition between the people there. You have a lot of enablers that just don't want to be involved in it. You know, they'll turn a blind eye or ignore things. And this officer that was guarding the Cuomo, you know, he met her at an event. All of a sudden, she gets elevated without the qualifications to be on a security detail. All of a sudden, she's at his home, and all of a sudden, you know, she knows the laws, and at that time, she didn't want to pursue this publicly until after it came out with the other ladies, you know. So some of it's just the victims don't want to report it and feel that it will hurt their careers. And she did benefit a great deal from the governor, but she also, there was a horrible illegal side effect to the benefit. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what is interesting though is I read that some people have issues with I guess being forced or being coerced into something that they didn't want to become engaged in, and as you said, it could be a financial reason for it. And people just don't, well, they don't feel there's another way to advance, so they permit it. But then there are some people who say they don't want that sort of attention for any reason. So the question is, how many options do they have? They have the option of quitting, or they have the option of trying to have some sort of structure within government or even big business where you can actually make a complaint and put an end to it. But even women who receive complaints from other women try to cause women to forget it. They want them to dismiss it. So they poo-poo it as well. And I think that's got to be a very tragic situation for a woman that feels being put upon. And just because you're a woman, does that mean that you have to suffer this sort of abuse? And why do we tolerate it? You know, we all have a mother, right? We either know the mother or we may not know the mother. You never know. Some people are adopted, so they may not know their actual mother, their physical mother, but they have a mother. So, or likely they do. Yet there are also people who are gay, and then they may be two fathers or two mothers. But the point is, you've got somebody there to support you. How do you deal with this structure? And are we just not learning the lessons of a woman not knowing how to put a man in his place? Or do men become more sophisticated and know how to undermine a woman?
Well, I would say this.
I don't know how it works anymore.
It's a little bit out of things I'm familiar with, but I think there's a psychological aspect. There's how can I say this? There are abusers. I think I don't have no proof of this, but I think they tend to locate people that are susceptible to receiving the abuse.
Vulnerable.
I know one of the ladies, vulnerable. Thank you. That's the word I'm looking for. One of the ladies I know was very young. She had been a victim of sexual abuse. And then I think in the report, he was asking about that. And for lack of a better word, like grooming or putting in a position to where it's easy to do that. There were women in his office. The one who just resigned, who was there the whole time, that was listed in the report as an enabler, who wasn't bothered by Cuomo. You know, you weren't going to mess with his chief of staff, but you know what, you could mess with this girl from Westchester, who was a volunteer firefighter. I don't know, maybe 20 years old, who'd been abused before, and all of a sudden she's in the governor's office, some kind of policy advisor with no background in that field. You know what I'm saying? So one, like the law enforcement officer, she technically wasn't supposed to be on that security detail, but she got elevated by him, and then so you're a little uncomfortable, I think, knowing that you're there because of that person. Two, the person is apparently he's very skilled at this. He did it for a very long time. Yeah, so it's maybe someone like yourself wouldn't be easy to abuse. You bite back and you bite back hard. You know what I'm saying? But other people can be abused. You know, and it's not just even women. Yeah. Even within Fox News, you don't see Anthony Politano anymore. He was a big star there, right? But guess what?
Yep.
He was sitting on his mail. He was hiring different male producers and hitting up on them right and left, up right and left. And then eventually one of them sued him and Fox sent him packing. So I guess it's just a testosterone field. Many workplaces are just testosterone field. You know that it's just it's not all about the job. Sometimes it's all a lot of times about power.
Well, yeah, that's what it is. This sort of conduct is just really a power trip. I remember there were three women whose names I had gotten, and the allegation was that somebody in the government come on to them. And what I realized was that this male who had somehow been involved with these women, it was like a subtle molestation. But the problem he was having was that he was uncertain of his sexuality. So I don't think he was gay. I don't think he was straight. He was probably somewhere in the middle, so he could go either way, so to speak. But what was very interesting is when I called up the women, I said, look, I hear that so-and-so has come on to you, and all I want to know is, and I'm not going to write your name in that paper and never going to mention who you are, but I just want to know if this happened. And you know, they were so scared they wouldn't even admit that something happened.
Yeah.
this is what's frightening about the situation. You know, we're going through life as adults. You know, we may be bullied as children, so we get bullied for one reason or another. It's a power trip there. We get bullied when we're adults. People come on to us that we don't want their attention, and they can cause a problem. I don't know if we can ever change that dynamic where there's respect. And I guess because people come to the equation with different ideas of what respect is. You know, remember the hashtag MeToo generation? All of a sudden we had women who wanted to get a job with Harvey Weinstein, and they would go up to his place, he would go up to his apartment, and he would ask them to do things, whatever that was. And I'm saying, really? I mean, is there no other job you can get other than putting out? It just doesn't make sense to me.
Some people want to be in a certain trade, and, you know, society's been evolving. You know, it's, you know, the kind of like the Mad Men depictions of how things were in the 60s or early 70s is much different than how things are now. And how, even for somebody who's a homosexual, how their situation in the 50s is different than the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, and now too.
Yeah.
So,
That's right.
You know, and you compare societies, you know, how Iran might view some of these things, or some other societies might view it, and how we view it is quite different, you know, with women and what their situation should be. But so it's just like the law. The law is constantly evolving. Society's constantly evolving. Even people's understanding of things kind of evolve. I don't you know, like the Kathy Hochul. She said she initially was against the green light bill that would allow illegal aliens to get a license. You know what I'm saying? But now she's evolved and goes to that bill. I don't know, either from political pressure or she looked at the facts that, you know, people got to get their kids to school, they got to get to work, they got to do.
Oh, that makes sense. Well, we lost him again, so this time I'm ready, so I'm going to dial him back. There he is. Hello, Brian. Okay. Well, I don't know. We got disconnected, so we'll have to wait for him to dial us up. Maybe he's run out of power. So that could be the issue. Very, very interesting. I forgot what I was thinking because of the disconnect. I don't remember where I was going to go with this. Oh, here he is. He's back. Bear with me a moment. There we are, Brian. No problem.
I'm so sorry. I don't know why this keeps dropping. I'm just at home sitting at my desk. But maybe just maybe something with the phone service or something or something.
Absolutely.
I don't know, but it's we'll just have to blame Sprint, I guess. But the or T-Mobile as it is now. But but I was getting ready to say it's just you know, things evolve. So you know, what Governor Cuomo could have did, you know, 4, 5, 6 years ago is not what he can do now, you know, and it's, a lot of politicians had better take note of that kind of thing, because you get all kind of allegations at the county level, at the local levels, even in Yonkers, of, you know, that looks a little not kosher, you know, so.
Exactly. There was something based on, just before we got disconnected, I was thinking things are changing, even in the film industry. So the Harvey Weinsteins of the world, they're being trashed. And yet, I forgot this woman's name. She's an actress from Australia. And I think she was with John Travolta years and years ago in a movie. And she evidently teamed up with 3 or 4 other women. And they produced films. So they're the producers now. And so maybe more people will gravitate toward them because creativity is really up to par, and their women their movies have been successful. I don't know how many they've done, but everything that they have done has been successful. So maybe that's part of the evolution, and we have to go through these hiccups in life And that the response to the Harvey Weinsteins of the world and other people like him ended up changing, and now women are producers of film, and which they weren't before. They may have been directors, but not producers. So very interesting.
I've had to things that I might have joked at about as a young man, or especially after I became an employer, you know, things became very different in how I had to present things, because I was in a position of hiring and firing people. And so the how can I say this? It's people do evolve over time, you know, and maybe with, you know, when they do the next budget and with this new governor, first of all, the new governor may implement sexual harassment training in a much more effective way than Mr. Cuomo did. Second of all, when you get the two women having a majority when they do the budget with the three people in a room, you know, we might get a little more compassionate or a better outcome. And then also you have two African-Americans in there. It might have a more focus on people that are disenfranchised a little bit from the system. So even in Yonkers, we're starting to see that now. You know, if Ms. Lakeisha Collins Bellamy is elected, you're going to have four African-American women as the majority on the city council. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. The women will be the majority. African-Americans will be the majority. And, you know, it may not turn out to be that way, but they're pretty close. So the things are evolving a little bit, and people that weren't included or didn't have seats at the table are now getting seats, and they're actually getting majority positions or positions of power, where just before it was just to get a seat at the table to kind of be represented. Now it's kind of like we've got a seat at the table, and we've got a majority, and we want to see these changes. And we've seen a lot of changes in society in the last 4 or 5 years. So,
yeah, we're coming up with a new election. It's going to be very interesting. Any contemplation whatsoever with regard to, I know I wrote an article about a week and a half or 2 weeks ago, I don't remember when, with the prospect that maybe Hillary Clinton will run for governor.
Yes.
When it's up for a re-election, it's about a year and a half away. And I remember being poo-pooed by a couple of comments. How is it that you know the Clintons are really savvy? How is it that the Yonkers Tribune has this information and you're the only one?
Mm-hmm.
So I was so thrilled because some guy by the name of Kramer, he's an analyst, and he was on PIX, Channel 11 in New York. And he also mentioned Hillary Clinton. And then there was recently more speculation about Hillary Clinton coming on because she's got a name, she's got money, she's got recognition.
It's above the fold in the New York Times today. It's listing the possible replacements for Governor Cuomo. So I just read the same thing there. And like I shared your article a couple weeks back or so.
Yeah,
and,
isn't that amazing?
Yeah, you were a little ahead of the curve in predicting her. But it is she is a little bit of a polarizing figure, but you know what? The Clintons can raise money, and this is a money game. And I don't know how good Ms. Hochul will be at raising money like Cuomo was, but
I don't know.
She can raise money, and she has people. She has contacts to put a ground operation together very, very quickly. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
You know. It could be any federal official from Gillibrand to Schumer to someone else. So many county executives in Long Island or upstate or even in the Hudson Valley here. You got mayors of major big five cities that have a base right underneath them.
Let's say
who knows?
People are even talking about Mayor Mike Spano running for lieutenant governor.
Mm-hmm.
Possible. Assuming he wants to line up with Hochul, who since she will become the governor, she'll be an incumbent, and she'll be looking for a supporting you know, candidate to run with her. So you never know where Mike Spadlin might end up.
That far apart in political views. She's kind of like a moderate Democrat, is my understanding. And he's also a little bit of a moderate Democrat. I don't think they're too far apart in views. I don't know of any place where they would clash horrendously on an issue. And so it is doable, but it's going to be a bloodbath, Hezzy. When this thing comes up, you're going to have Hochul. There's going to be 24 people to think I have a shot, and it's going to get whittled down to 12, and it's going to get ugly to 6, and then it's going to be some primaries, and it's not going to be pretty. But either from the left or from the little right to her or people right down in the middle, it's just going to be it's going to be something. It's kind of almost the same thing's going to happen in Westchester County. After, I believe Mr. Latimer will win this election, but he's termed himself out on purpose. He said, I'm not going to do it. Supposedly, the rumor is there's a deal that Mr. Ken Jenkins will be supported to be county executive.
That's what Latimer promised Ken Jenkins, that he would only be there for 2 terms.
But that doesn't mean nothing to anybody else, from a Paul Finer to who knows who else. You know, it's going to be once Latimer's gone, it's going to be a free for all there too. It's going to be interesting political times over the next couple elections. For many reasons,
absolutely,
not just those.
So you know, those will be fun to watch. Those will be fun to be involved with. So that's going to be very, very compelling. A lot of things have literally changed overnight with Cuomo being pushed out the door. What about the options for the Republican Party? You got Zeldin, who is coming on very strong. He's getting support from the Republican Party and the Conservative Party. And Astorino, when it came up to who was going to support Astorino, he only got 5% of the vote. Can you imagine? And the rest of the Republicans went elsewhere.
Yeah, Westchester's a little out of step with that.
What the hell is going on here?
Well, you know, it's it's still in New York, I guess. The Republicans still have some life in them. They've just made such horrific choices. Even now, they still have Trump coming up here. They should just get as far away as they can from the person. But you know, the Democrats are feeling their oats. They have provided a lot of benefits and protections for people, and they are in dominance. So unless they just rip each other apart in a primary, you know, I don't see the Republicans pulling it off, you know, even though there is a lot of, resentment about downstate as you go more north in New York.
It looks like the Republican conservative votes are heading over to Zeldin. So I think we'll find out that Astorino is not going to make it.
No,
I don't think he'll be able to last. But so that's going to be a very, very compelling race, and see where we go with that.
He is a good candidate. I'll say this to Mr. Astorino. I don't agree with him on more than a few things. He racked up a lot of debt in Westchester stuff, but he is a compelling candidate in that he's a great communicator, and he is able to make points really well. And he won't be going against Cuomo this time either, so I wouldn't totally write him out, but right now it doesn't look too promising.
Well, I've thrown him out in my mind because if the Republicans and the conservatives decided not to support him, and only 5% of Republicans decided to support him, then that means he's finished. He's just got no juice anymore, and I think the public is more interested in fiscal prudence, you know. Hey, it's the people's money, and so they expect they don't expect you to come in and talk a good game and then create a debacle where financially the county was bereft because of his conduct. So and there was also a situation where he also ran roughshod over a lot of people in
He's known for that too, yes. He's not someone you want to cross. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, exactly. Well, And then he wasn't such a nice guy, you know. I think I remember when he ended up claiming to have purchased a Rolex for very little money, and or it was a gift. Or I don't know. But the whole thing was a sham and a scam. And I remember writing up about it, but I don't remember exactly how it all transpired. You know, we can't afford to have people like this that are just not on the level. You know, you did something, own up to it. You don't want to own up to it, don't do it. Is it that difficult?
Yeah.
So,
his strength was just taxes are too high, taxes too high, I'm going to cut. But he just ran up the debt from doing that, and then and some things in the county got much worse, you know. But
we turned
around from that. So even with this COVID thing, but I have to say I was very Mr. Trump was a disaster with the COVID.
I want you to talk
about leadership, I guess. Yeah, with leadership there. And I was very happy when Mr. Biden came in and initially we're going to do this in 100 days and we got these targets for getting a number of people vaccinated. But now I'm starting to be a little disappointed with Mr. Biden because he's not providing the leadership that's needed. We have this Delta virus. It's over three quarters of the country, even our own county. You know, you should be putting on a mask inside now again. And he should be mandating, you know, some of these shots and some of these masks, you know what I'm saying, a lot more than he is. It's not, and I also think on the county and in the, well, at least the Mayor Spano, he did mandate, you know, the school employees and the city employees have to have this by September or they got to do weekly testing because it's just that this is not about personal freedom. This is about killing people. And now it's getting to where children are the most susceptible to this thing than where they weren't susceptible before with this Delta variant. And these unvaccinated people are a menace to society. And they have to either be tested weekly or they have to get this damn shot. And they have to be quarantined so we can get this thing under control because it's there. But you don't see Mr. Biden coming on strong. This has to be done, you know.
Well, you know, I don't think that the president can say whatever he wants, but also if there were states that wanted to get it done, they have the authority to say, you've got to do this in Florida, which they're not saying, and you could do this in Texas, but they're not doing it. And
you know,
so
in New York,
these are political games that they play.
If in New York, if Governor Cuomo, as one of his last acts, says, we're not going to go with the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit. The new speed limit in New York is 70 miles an hour. The federal government would pull highway funds. You know what I'm saying? There's a punishment for that. In Westchester County, when the Justice Department came after Astorino for affordable housing, you know what? You're not getting the HUD money anymore. It's going to go to Albany, and Albany will give it to the individual governments. You're not touching it anymore. There are mechanisms that the president has to push for these vaccinations, and there's a lot of things that get federal funding that if you want to participate in these things, you have to have a shot. If this hospital gets federal funding, you need to be vaccinated. You know, if this they're going to do it with the military.
I suggest you plan now to run for president because, you know, that makes a lot of sense.
That'd be the biggest loss ever,
speaking of the former president, you know, he used to have a sign up in White Plains. He has the Trump Tower. So they decided to take that all down. So
oh, really?
He's already started, going down the tubes. So a lot of people don't want to have anything to do with him anymore. Well, certainly here in White Plains, they're not gonna do it. And I think that in New York City, he had a franchise on the golf courses. He lost that quite a few months ago.
Yes.
So, you know, this takes so much time to unravel, and before the public interest gets to know exactly what's going on. And so we'll see whatever his tax returns say and what that means. And what the implications are.
there's a lot of stuff going on, but it's
I believe
it's
the
a
Manhattan
lot of fun.
DA
we're,
is
we're living in exciting times.
Yeah, I believe the Manhattan DA and I believe Tish James are both on his case as far as taxes and that. But you know what's a real there is a sad part about this about him is he's a very troubled man. But you know he took the family business, he took some risks and was able to play the press very well to build a name for himself. And then it got to where he wasn't building stuff anymore. He actually was very clever. First he was trying casinos and Trump Air and Trump all these things,
right,
trying to market himself, right, like a marketing company. They fail. But the one thing he did well was that brand Trump. He was able to sell
right.
that, to put on a building that it supposedly meant luxury, and he didn't build the building. It just looked like he built the building. It was just he leased that
right.
name, you know, on these buildings, like the one in White
right.
Plains, you know what I'm saying? He doesn't
right.
own the building.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like the only construction company or developer that actually developed a brand that people wanted. And it went on hotels. He doesn't really own the hotels.
Mm-hmm.
A few of them he owns, but not really. He's not really a hoteler
right.
in the hospitality industry. But
mm-hmm.
that name was very valuable. And then when he got this TV show, what is it, You're Fired or whatever that is, that really enhanced that. But he destroyed all of that with this idea of wanting to become president and actually becoming president and not knowing his tail end from a hole in the ground. And now he's more of a pariah than anything, and he still pursues this political thing, which just more destroys what's left of his family business.
Right. Well, you know, I have to agree. I think his problem was when the office of becoming voted president went to his head, and he was also very belligerent, very belittling. He was denigrating of other people. You saw that on the stage when all the people who were running for political office against him went through this contest. He was just not a good guy, but there was something about him and the way he expressed himself where he practically bullied people into submission, in the discussions, and it enamored him to a lot of people. But that's not the way things work. But I think he's an anomaly. I don't think we'll ever get anybody else like him in the future again. People are very wary of somebody like him. Just like they were wary even with Hillary Clinton when she considers calling people the deplorables. Give me a break.
Yeah.
What is it? Would it have a disease of some sort? They also live in a different world.
Well, I hate to say this, has he? Deplorable doesn't bother me as much. You know, these people that she was referring to as deplorable that were the Ganzi people and the Tea Party people, they're the ones who became the QAnon people. They're the ones who became, let's attack the Capitol. They're the ones who wanted to hang
right.
the vice president, you know, and gallows in the front. So they're the ones who believed in these bizarre conspiracy theories that, that there's, some secret government, deep state government thing for to make Trump president to expose all these things. And them and their thoughts I'd be more kind to say psychotic, but it is deplorable. And it's what they've done to the country, and there's still people that won't get the shot because of these deplorables,
I agree with you, but then we don't have good guidance on a lot of things. And people think everyone's going to make their own decision, but your safety is your responsibility, and my safety is my responsibility. But at the end, if you're not going to be safe and I'm going to be vulnerable, then you don't have a right to do what you're doing because you're not allowed to put me in harm's way, and I'm not allowed to do that to you either. So I don't know where we lost all these concepts.
And I mean, it was ridiculous when you looked at the presidential stage when they were arguing who should be. It felt like they were bullying each other. It was infantile, and yet somehow it won the day. So yeah, we're going to have to straighten out our political gamemanship. It's not working. But I think more and more people now, they realize that they are more vulnerable if they haven't been vaccinated, are starting to get the vaccine, which thank God for that, because there are a lot of people that are very vulnerable. And the older you are, the more vulnerable you are, evidently, because you may lose your immunity even if you've been inoculated twice. And some of the inoculations are not as good as they thought they were. So to revisit all of this stuff. And I still don't know why so many people of color don't want to be inoculated. I'm not quite sure where that comes from. So it's a losing proposition. But I'm wearing my mask no matter what. Oh, well, let's see. I didn't realize you got disconnected, so
no,
here we go again.
No, I keep dropping this stupid call.
No
I don't know what's going on this way. My neighborhood here, but I would say this is the, you know, these people not getting vaccinated not only put other people in harm's way, but they're preventing people that have done the right thing from getting the booster. Right now, they're concentrating on getting the rest of this population vaccinated, and if they'd already done it, which they could have done with the way we were doing it before. We could be starting to go to our seniors, to our nursing homes, and vaccinating people, to people with immune systems that are there, people that have underlying conditions, and getting them their third shot. But we're not moving towards the third shot because the goal is to get these people up to 85 or so percent with two shots. And they're slowing down the process, and they're putting their neighbors at risk. They're putting their own children at risk. They're putting their own families at risk. And I don't want to say his name, but there was a gentleman that just made a video in Yonkers talking about, you know, his wife had gotten sick, his family had gotten sick, and his cousin just passed away from this, and his neighbors have passed away from it. But he was wearing a red Trump hat, you know, Make America Great Again, and initially was against this. And it just decimated his family, you know what I'm saying? So, in my opinion, you know, at some point people have to wake up and just say, look, this has to be done, and we need to get this to the other countries. We don't want more variants. This Delta variant's coming back. It's coming back strong, and it will throw us back into shutdown if we don't get our thing around it. We know how this works, and we don't need a variant with an E, an F, a G, an H. I don't know the Greek alphabet.
You got a new
but
variant.
That's what it turns out.
You got a new variant called Lambda that's coming from Peru.
Yeah, that's right.
Supposed to be even more virulent than the Delta virus.
Yeah, so
unbelievable.
We need to stop these variants. We need to get this under control, and then maybe once a year get a, just like we do for the flu, have this there and be done with this. And it's nothing new. That's the thing that irks me is we had this. The people talk about this vaccine came very fast. This is basically SARS.
Mm-hmm.
This is the blurred flu that was in China and
SARS.
Vietnam, and they wiped out this.
Right.
This is where they kept having this in Cambodia and India. It was just regional at that time. And sometimes it did get to ours, so we were able to contain it. But this time it exploded, and it went to a pandemic, and we just got to get it locked down, get it down where we have it under control. And we probably could have got it under control initially, but we were slow to act. And our president was part of that problem, and not just him. There were a lot of other leaders that were a part of the problem. But now it's time to take things, because we don't need another shutdown. We don't need two or three other variants. We need to get this down. We need to protect our children. We need to protect our seniors. And we need to go back to our lifestyle, how it used to be, you know.
Definitely. Definitely. There are a lot of issues right in front of us. These are troubling times, actually, when you think about it. It's not as easy as it used to be maybe 20 years ago. seemed life was simpler then, and now it's more complex, and we're also at each other's throats. Not you and I, but
yes.
The point is so many in society.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very frightening. Do you think our political system is going to change because of all of these things?
Well,
are we going to get new parties?
I feel that, how can I say this? Our political system has been eroded somewhat. We have a Bill of Rights. We have amendments to our Constitution. We have case law, but slowly but surely, moneyed interests are passing laws and getting judges that are eroding our rights. And things that were fundamental, like freedom of speech, freedom of the press, the right to assemble, are becoming less and less strong as they need to be. Maybe eventually the pendulum will swing back the other way, it's sad that most people don't even understand what their rights are. It's not really seems to be not civics doesn't seem to be taught much in schools anymore. People get motivated for like one right, and that becomes their one issue. You know what I'm saying? Whether it's freedom to bear arms. You know what I'm saying? But that becomes the only thing that's important to them, and becoming these one issue type of voters. But the last thing is just that. There is an attempt to silence people, to disenfranchise them, like with, you see all the laws against trying to prevent people from voting, you know what I'm saying, and making it harder to vote. Just an erosion of our rights, the things that make us uniquely American. You know, if there is an American exceptionalism, it's not that we had some manifest destiny. It's just that we had a system of laws and rights that it wasn't perfect, but it was evolving, and it protected the individual, and we're losing that.
So do you think that came about because it looked like we were losing ground even before the election of Donald Trump? But it certainly put a dagger in the heart of America after his 4 years because he failed.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the problem. And the reaction of the nation failed because of it.
You could go back to Citizens United where, you know, a corporation has more rights than you do or has the same rights. You could go back to, you know, where it became a surveillance state to where, you know, the NSA is able to suck up phone data right and left, you know. And you could go back to where now we really have NASA really doesn't send up rockets anymore because of freedom of information laws, we contract those stuff out, like to an Elon Musk. So then you can't foil Elon Musk. You can foil even the NSA, the FBI, the CIA, NASA, and other documents to try to get clues. But we've moved from even to try to get around freedom of information laws. You know, it seems like you get something that's supposed to help the people, and it doesn't. Even in New York, you passed the law, that the 501A law, that was about if there was any, you know, bad cops or disciplinary things for cops, that's supposed to be public record now. But then you have a freedom of information law that says this is supposed to be 25 cents a page, and if it's been in electronic form, it's supposed to be free. But all of a sudden, if you want it in Yonkers, they're telling Muckraker you need $30,000 to get this information. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
There isn't a respect for the law. There isn't a respect for rights, and there isn't a respect for the individual like it used to be. And I'm not saying it was always perfect. You know, we have in my opinion, we have the best legal system on the face of the earth. It's not perfect, but it's the best one. You know what I'm saying? And we can be improved.
Mm-hmm.
But we are becoming fat, dumb, and happy, and we're allowing a lot of even corporations to violate our rights and our individuals. Most people don't realize that, you know, you download a CBS app and you just want to see where the next CBS story is. It's reporting your location to like 30 different places. You know what I'm saying? It's telling Google you're here. It's telling Facebook you're here. It's telling advertisers you're here so they can track what you're buying. When you go into a store, it's when you're stopping with that phone, it's telling you, what is this, a tracking device? You know, I don't download. Mm-hmm. I've got people bugging me to download Zoom and all kind of apps, and I don't download apps because it's just it's just a matter of a they give more information. People get that little light on their iPhone, you know, oh, it's so cool. I can, put the key in my door because my phone lights up like a little flashlight. But it's you agreed to allow it to suck all your personal data, all your contacts, all your information. You know what I'm saying? So
It's
when Google goes by and drives by your house, you know, and it's taking a picture. It's so handy with Google Maps, but people don't realize that it's recorded your IP address for your Wi-Fi if you have it, and associated it with that address, so that they can know when you log on where you live. But we shouldn't have those type of privacy violations, in my opinion.
I agree. But a lot of people don't realize that because they don't read the fine print. And it's not fine print, but people don't keep up with the technology, so they're unaware of the capacity of the technology. Well, there are even thoughts now. I think it was Apple that put together this concept where they're going to be able to, if you upload photos in your cell phone or your iPad, they're going to be able to view it at their end and decide if there's something that isn't correct and that might be molestation of children. So that's one issue, and maybe some people will think it's appropriate, and it may just be in order to make sure that kids are not molested by adults, but then they can use that same technology to do other things. And there was even discussion where your iPhone went on and it was recording photos of you, unbeknownst to you. It's amazing what these machines
I look
can
like
do.
I look like a paranoid fool because on my laptop I have a post-it note stuck over the webcam. Even if I wanted to download Zoom, it's probably you're not going to get a clear picture because it's going to be gummy from these post-it notes I put up over it over the years.
No, and I thought I was the only idiot that did that. I didn't put up the post-it note, but you know when you buy like some fruits, like vegetables or tomatoes. Or oranges or lemons, that sort of stuff. They usually have a little thing there to tell you where it came from. You know, like it's an avocado from Mexico. I take that off and I stick
stickers.
It on
those,
where
those
my
are pretty
camera.
Heavy duty stickers too.
Yes.
I saw a picture of Mark Zuckerberg, same thing, covering up the webcam. And Jack Dorsey at Twitter, except he had a Band-Aid. He had, like, it looked like a Band-Aid was on it. You know what I'm saying? That I guess it's stuck on either side with there. But so if these people that have invented and are profiting from these social media sites cover their webcam, maybe, you know what? And there have been instances where, you know, even schools have handed out laptops to children, you know, like a Chromebook or something. Yeah. And then to update and they get to tunnel into the laptops for, to maintain it or update software or something like that.
Yeah.
And apparently some administrators at some schools were able to access the cameras of kids in their rooms. You know what I'm saying? That came out, I saw in California a couple years back. So it's there probably should be more coverage and more news about privacy violations, and there should be more coverage and interest about how we're losing some of our civil rights. You know, it's just people are intimidated now from even in Yonkers. You know, you used to have the NAACP that was willing to show up at City Hall and hey, ho, ho, you know, this has got to go, and you know what, we're going to the Supreme Court, and we're going to get a federal judge. But now, they'll try to maybe send you a message or me a message. Could you put this out? They don't want to get involved. They want to give you a little tip. But you don't really see anyone out there taking it to the streets. This is wrong. You know what I'm saying? You have so many children, teenagers, that are getting shot, stabbed, assaulted, being involved in gangs, but you don't see any of the community leaders marching on City Hall. You don't see any of them, you know, speaking out on the steps of City Hall. That's just that this idea of assembling. We'll assemble to raise a flag for every country on the planet. We'll assemble to give awards to someone that won a poetry contest or something, and give each other awards and that kind of stuff. But we won't assemble to protect children. We won't assemble to provide for our seniors. We won't assemble to get changes in our school system, because there's a fear of speaking out in this community, and not just here, some other, many other communities too. But
yeah, but that's a good part.
I gotta
get off
my soapbox here before I give myself a heart attack.
Well, that needed to be said. You know, a lot of stuff is not being said. And we think that people know, but they don't. So
people,
it's a crazy
know
world.
What's going on a lot of times. They share it like there's crazy, but they share it secretly in messages and whispering campaigns.
Yeah.
And but they really need to. Everybody's a community advocate. Everybody's a community leader. You know what I'm saying? If if all of a sudden I want to give children notepads in the schools, I'm an education advocate, you know what I'm saying? But what we really need is real advocates. We need real advocates that will speak and speak hard, speak truth to power. You just don't have that, you know. I'm hoping we'll see more of that in the future.
I think we do. I think we do to some extent. Not all media does the same thing, but I think we're getting more and more of that. The problem is we have a lot of people who espouse concepts and ideas that are not valid. So they're not scientifically valid. They may not be valid by other means. Look at what we've gone through with the climate change crisis. And you know what's so weird about that? I remember studying that to some extent. It turned out the blame was that some Korean scientist came up with the concept of the climate change thing, or he was the one that was poo-pooed or had poo-pooed it. I don't know exactly how it happened. And it's been a battle royale ever since. But North Africa is burning. The Middle East is burning. California is burning. Canada is burning. Wherever you look, the tundra in Russia is melting. And they're having problems all over the world. The oceans are just being inundated with plastics. We know all this was going on, but somehow we permitted it because there was money involved. And you know, I still question why don't we still have the capacity to get milk in a glass container? Remember those days? What was the problem with that? And they made it easier. They said it was too heavy. And in Israel was where I first saw it, where they had, you could buy milk, and they made it look like a pyramid. They filled it up like a pyramid so you could store it, and it was made out of plastic.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, glass was more expensive, but at least you could reuse it. So the point is that you could disinfect it, and it would have worked. So, you know, we're throwing so much crap into the ocean, even the fish are dying from it. And we're eating fish. Unbelievable.
You know what it is there's three R's. It's like, I think it's like reuse, recycle, and I'm trying to think of the third R, but it's just like to use less, basically, you know, to repackage or something like that. And the problem is the industry has pushed for recycle, 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 recycle. They haven't pushed for reuse so much, you know what I'm saying, or repackage.
No, right.
And so the you go, and when they take stuff to be recycled, especially with a lot of plastic items, it's not recyclable.
Yeah.
a lot of the plastic that we put out on the street and it gets sent over to a recycling place is not recycled, and they end up shipping it overseas, and now even some countries are saying we don't want it no more. You know, it's gotten to the point of ridiculous.
Exactly. That's right.
And so
they don't want it.
And there's, as much as I don't like, I'm still learning to do it, and I have finally learned to do it. I don't like taking these bags to the store with me and filling them up, or getting there and then the person doesn't really even, now they don't even put stuff in your bag. You got to put stuff in your own bag, you know, kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But the, and as much as I don't care for that, it is the right thing to do. You know what I'm saying? I've learned to do it. You know what I'm saying? And eventually I didn't like seatbelts when they first mandated it. You know what I'm saying? But I had to do it.
Took me a while.
Now it's just second nature. At first, it was uncomfortable. I couldn't stand it for like the first couple weeks. But then I didn't even notice it after a while. And it just became automatic. You know, I had to fight my kids
now that
to put the damn belt on.
A lot of people nowadays are not putting it on anymore, and I can't understand that because if you get into a crash, you're going to go through the window. You could be dead. For what reason? Just because you don't want to put on a seatbelt? That's to me is insanity. But
I used to have with my wife in the car with the kids. First of all, we started putting the seatbelts on, and I had kids that didn't want to put. They're as stubborn as me, right? So I'm like, this car is not going to move until you get your seatbelt on. So then it's going to be who's going to last longer, you know? Am I or are they going to last longer? So finally, like, you know, get out of the car. You know what I'm saying? you know your address. You go ahead and find it. My wife's yelling at me. I'm yelling at the kids. Get the hell out of the car. You're not going to put on a seatbelt. Get out of the car. And then finally they're putting on the seatbelts. But eventually it all came together. But now I just put seatbelts on automatically. I don't even think about it. You know, it's just
exactly.
That's probably part of this thing with the mask.
In the 70s,
now I just put on a mask. I walk out the door, I have a mask on.
Yeah, I think it was in the very early 70s. My first car was a Volvo DL144, and so they had the seatbelt on, and I got used to it, but it took me a while to get used to it because I had never been in a car with seatbelts before. But now it's second nature. But I don't drive. I'm no longer allowed to drive because the medications I'm on. So that's a shame. But then I would put on the seatbelt though. And I miss driving, that's for sure. Oh, God. I think we lost Brian again. So we'll see what happens. He may call back. Yeah, there he is.
I'm so
sorry,
Brian. I don't know what's going
back
on with this.
No,
it's just it's the craziest thing.
It's not your fault.
Maybe it's the heat in the area or something. I don't know. Something's crazy with this. I don't know what's going on.
I think... Remember since the time we got hacked in the country? And I think ever since that time, I noticed that there were problems with the Internet. There are problems even now. Problems. There were delays in the Internet only a couple of days ago. I would punch in the button, and it wouldn't close. I would complete a task, and then when I looked back later, I see that the corrections I had made were not incorporated. So I had to do it again.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah, these are things that are happening. I think a lot of it has to do with the Internet failing. It's not functioning like it used to. And this has been going on for about a month or a month and a half now. It's not every day. And sometimes it tells me that the connection is no connection. It's disconnected. What do you mean it's disconnected?
Yeah.
It's been working on this page. Why isn't it working on another page?
Maybe it's on your end where I'm calling you. I don't know. I haven't had much troubles, but somehow or another, it's awful strange that it just drops. But who knows what's going on?
Well, you know, you could be right. It could be Blog Talk Radio. You call up a number that is them, and then I'm connected to them, and something is breaking down. So either it's calling them or the connection from them to me is breaking down. Well, you know,
actually,
the Internet
this,
is not as good as we thought it was.
When I first got this phone service Sprint, there were areas that used to drop out. This is like the 80s and early 90s, right? So you would just
–
there were certain places that – I would even tell people, you know, I'm going down 287 right by Harrison. I drop out, you know, I'll call you
back.
But exactly. Now it got to where it just was perfect. And then actually T-Mobile took over Sprint, and I believe it is. And then it's even better than it was before. You know, it just and I don't use 5G. I use, you know, I sound like the paranoid guy about not downloading apps and stuff. But I'm on 3G. I use a flip phone. I just answer the phone. Hello, Brian. Can I help you? And I don't like to text. I don't like to search on my phone for things. I use a laptop. Mm. And even with the laptop, I use Linux. I don't use the commercial applications. Mm-hmm. But I've been very, very happy with Sprint over these decades. You know, I know everybody talked about Verizon this and all these other things, but they were more expensive, and I always kind of thought they were maybe as reliable or maybe not as reliable, at least in this area.
Well, I don't know if they're more reliable. I'm on Verizon, and I think that mm-hmm. quite often they've got issues and they don't mm-hmm. resolve it and they don't tell you. So, you know, and I'm not as adept as utilizing the internet as you are. And so, you know, I repeat the same thing, and before I know it, when something goes wrong, they've changed something. They've changed mm-hmm. the methodology. They've changed the progression of how things work. They don't tell you mm-hmm. that. They just do it. And there's no time to become accommodated to it.
Yeah.
Especially for someone like me that, you know, I'm a writer. I'm not there knowing how to use the computer as much. So mm-hmm. I think eventually, you know, people are going to get into this sort of business. They had best know how to use the computer as well as learn to write.
Well, you're more like a word
up.
Processing to craft the stories and to tell the tales.
Exactly.
And from there, online. But even now, online has gotten more tricky. You know, you're adding video, you're adding photos, breaking stories up. It's gotten to be much, much more, and it's got to be mobile friendly now. So it
got so complex. For example, since all of this stuff began, I was having trouble signing into Facebook. Then they used mm-hmm. to say to me they wanted a new password, so you had to change it, and that didn't work. Mm-hmm. Went on and on and on, back and forth, hours on this bullshit. And at the end, I said, you know what? I've had enough. I'm not going to go through this. And then today I get a notice. Well, you know, we've missed you. Really, you haven't missed me. You're a goddamn machine. I'm not going to come over there and kiss you. I'm not going to hug you. You're not hugging me back. So don't tell me you missed me.
Hey,
sounds good. You know, and so, you know,
he was just right around Ardsley White Plains. Zuckerberg, he might have missed you. Maybe he read the Yonkers Tribune.
You
he was
never
kind of
know.
You were on his platform.
Exactly. So,
20 years ago, he might have been, oh, wow, looking at this Yonkers Tribune story here.
Yeah, well, what I'm going to do is actually today, it's not today, certainly by the time the weekend is over, I will try to get back and see if I could resurrect this thing, and hopefully mm-hmm. it'll stay put. Because I can't stand it. But you know, like, I don't lurk. A lot of people say, are you lurking on Facebook? I said, no, I'm not lurking. I don't have the time. They say, did you see this movie? You know, I said, no, I don't have the time to see the movie. If I did, I would be doing it. But, you know, I don't.
I've talked to a lot of people, even here in Yonkers, right? Facebook
mm-hmm.
upset a lot of older people in Yonkers maybe 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, because they used to, like put them in Facebook jail for a week, like they did something wrong or
mm-hmm.
you know, did little punishments, you know what I'm saying, which is very common now, but that wasn't so common then. And it seemed to be, you know, maybe an older person who grew up in the 60s and was used to just expressing their opinion and letting it all hang out. You know, I think X,
mm-hmm.
Y, and Z, and you're a complete idiot if you think different, boom. And then, wait a minute, what do you mean I can't get on for a week or something? And that turned a lot of older people who really like to use Facebook into lurkers. They come, they read. That's all. They don't really comment or interact.
Uh-huh.
You know, maybe they'll like something, but they just don't comment much because they just pissed them off. Maybe they even told their their friends, screw Facebook, you know what I'm saying? So then after that, mm-hmm. they feel like they can't comment, you know, because it's once you say something in Yonkers, it's supposed to be for the rest of your life or something, you know, that it's
oh, yeah, right.
There's people that, people that have feuds that have been going on for like 30 years in Yonkers, you know, kind of thing. He said that to me 30 years ago, and they're still mad.
Well, I was born in 1950, so I'm 71 years old, so I'm one of those people you're talking about. You know,
yeah.
old, you know, one of those baby boomers, these old guys that, you know, when I look at Facebook, and maybe this will be demeaning to some extent, but it's a place where you can have discourse, you can share opinions if you want. The problem is that a lot of opinions are just outrageous the way they're expressed. So mm-hmm. you could. And then there are a lot of complaints that people make, and Facebooks make this decision whether you should be able to hold on to a comment or not. And mm-hmm. I don't know why the person who initiated this sort of conduct should be permitted to have their say. Or if you don't like my opinion, then don't read the goddamn thing.
Yeah.
No one asked
you know
me
what
to
happened
there.
You know what happened?
I don't get it.
Originally, you know, you had these what they call BBS boards, where you had like the computer geeks that were like commenting back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
It stayed up; it
I
didn't get deleted. And you know, it's like mm-hmm. you know, Hezzy, you couldn't be more hopelessly wrong about this political issue if you try. Blah 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 blah. And you'd say, well, you know, Brian, you don't know your ass from a hole in the ground. The Yahoo and the AOL, I guess AOL was first, Yahoo and MSN, these chat rooms, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Which were just glorified boards with a few more extra features, like, and they were faster and more people got involved. And it
mm-hmm.
was free, open speech, you know, it really took a lot to have somebody banned or something, you know, it was a wild, wild west of these boards, you know, they had the topics. News thing, the kind of aggregated news like I do, where people commented about the news right and left and the whole nine yards, and it was really a very fluid thing. But Facebook took and monetized those boards, so it's about advertising and it's about engagement and keeping people there and keeping people happy and keeping people moving. You know what I'm saying? So, and they try to limit these, this discourse, where it gets to be a little too testy because it's all about the advertising, and it's a very effective advertising platform. You know, just where they, where you're able to, they know so much about you, you give up so much information of what you like, what you don't like, what's this, they can build a very good profile of you, group you with other similar profiles and sell them pretty easy. And and it's very good at selling products, just like Google Ads. They know so much about you that when you could be talking about, I really am interested in a Mazda. All of a sudden you're seeing Mazda ads, you know, when you go surfing websites, you know what I'm saying, because it was in your Gmail. But when you with Facebook, the same way, the advertising is very effective, very targeted, and really gives people stuff that they are interested in. But it's so effective, even with political ads, you can take them and just flip them on their heads with where you can throw an election with false news. You know, it's just where commercial advertising is regulated. You know what I'm saying? You can't make false claims. Unfortunately, in political type of propaganda, you can make, you know, things that are not so true. And it got Trump elected, you know. So
yeah, it did. Well, you know,
but
you're talking about
it's very effective
platform.
Advertising.
I used to, if I would look up a product, then I would get, like, wherever I would go for the next day or two, or I don't know how long, I would get other items like that showing up on my website, and to wherever I went. It didn't matter, not on my personal website, but it could have been anywhere. And then all of a sudden there was this new company that I only started to engage last week. And what they do is, if let's say you went and looked up for a Mazda for whatever reason, then and you came onto my website, if they might end up showing you a Mazda or a Hyundai or something else to bring it all together. So everybody is doing the same thing, and it's supposedly a monetizing sort of process. I found it when I first got on. I said, I don't know if I like this, because it was at the top of the page, and when you got to the front of the page, somehow the ad showed up there, and then when you had to scroll down a little further, and there was a second ad, and but it took me about a week or so, and I got a little bit more used to it. I'm still not comfortable with it. But it becomes a question of money as well. If it pulls in enough money after I test it for about a month or two, then fine. Because it takes about 2 weeks for them to really put it all together. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens with it. But that's one of the problems, too. There's so many changes that way. And I think a lot of potential advertisers are out of the mix, because they can't keep up with the sophistication of it all.
Kezi, I was, I guess about 10 or 12 years ago, just about when Facebook was coming out, maybe a little before, I was hired by a hedge fund in Greenwich. I was living in Greenwich at the time, and I had built a lot of these. I had blogs then, similar to what Delphin has with the blogger blogs. So I had about 100 blogs, different communities, putting up news. So I was approached by this, they were called QBank, and they had this, they formed a company, Behavioral Media Network or something like that. And then they from there they had bought rights to the MIT mind mapping engine. And at that time it was pretty revolutionary. Their whole thing was Google used to provide the ads for AOL. AOL was looking to get out of the contract with Google, and instead of renewing it, is before Verizon bought AOL, but they seeded these companies with $50,000 to test out different ad serving platforms to see if they could, generate the same kind of income, that kind of thing. So their whole thing with this mind mapping engine was it was just going to search your cookies, and it wasn't like Facebook where you gave it the information. It was just where had you been, what had you searched, just when they went to your browser, they were just searching through. And very primitive compared to what they do now. And there was a retail product for advertising for like a search engine like AOL. There was a corporate one where at that time there were all these postal shootings and that kind of stuff that, they would be looking at the text messages, the emails, what you searched for, and, you might want to take a look at this employee, that kind of thing.
Right.
And then there was a government contract.
As long as that's
2 minutes
left.
Yeah. So I had to build 200 blogs for a test. One was just going to just serve up ads randomly. One was going to use this. And I had already about 100 blogs. So, and then they would put the ads based upon when a person visited, what their cookies were. And then all of a sudden, after about 6-7 months, it's supposed to run for a year, this test, they shut it down. They paid me the final 6 months. I had to sign an NDA. They shut down the corporate one, and I guess it became like a government contractor, maybe for the NSA. I don't know what happened to it. But and then Facebook was kind of working on the same thing, but much more sophisticated, because they get you to give up your information. Where were you born? Mm-hmm. What do you like? Blah, 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 blah. Anyway, I appreciate you having me on here.
No, you need to write a book. All that stuff is very fascinating. It's like an evolution of the computer business.
Yes.
So unfortunately, we have only 60 seconds left. So have a great week. Thanks so much for your input. All the best. And
thank you.
The internet functions.
Yes. All the best to you. And have a good weekend, Hezi. Bye-bye now.
You too, sir. All the best. Thank you. Goodbye. Well, there we are, folks. None other than Brian Harrod. He's a Yonkers Newswire publisher and editor. And we'll speak to him next week as well. And local news, so you could look it up at Yonkers Newswire. He operates off of the Facebook platform. And that's it. So we'll speak to you tomorrow. And I don't remember who's on for tomorrow, but we always have somebody that's interesting to talk to and about. So all the best to everyone else. Thank you for being with us today.
Goodbye.